Welcome back to another tantalizing episode of the Blue Line Brothers. This is Fred.
This is Frank.
And we're back to talk about the do's and don'ts of carrying a firearm.
Yeah.
Have you seen anybody of late carrying a firearm, Frank? I mean, in public, you know, doing your shopping and all that? Have
you? Well, I mean, you go to the, you know, the high-end places like, how should we say, Wallace World?
Yes.
Or Wallace Mart. You know, just the other day, there were two individuals wearing yoga pants with, one had a pink gun and the other one had a purple gun. It was more of an accessory than a tool. Just hanging out for all the world to see in a holster that was like three sizes too big. Every time they would take a step, the gun would just flop around in there. So, you know.
So you're telling me you were just a step away from contacting the fashion police and having them reported?
Yeah.
I mean, who in their right mind would carry a pink gun in a holster too large while wearing some type of leotard thing?
Obviously them. Not me.
Now, I along those lines, I have to ask, did the pink gun actually match the hue of pink with the other color combination, if you will, of the outfit?
No, it was more of like a, how should I say, trailer parkish.
So definitely they were committing some fashion felonies then.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, not just carrying a firearm in some type of silly situation, but they were actually committing a legitimate set of fashion felonies.
Yeah, I mean, I could delve deep into this, but I'm just going to say, yes, you are correct.
Okay, so what you're telling me, Frank, is it would not be a wise idea to carry a weapon in public in a unsecured fashion to the point that it would be shaking or jiggling within a holster.
Well, I mean, just from the standpoint of retention, no.
Retention? You think that's something to consider?
For me, yeah.
Oh.
I don't want to get shot in the face with my own gun.
That would be kind of embarrassing.
Especially a pink gun, too. I mean,
Well, now, that, of course, that begs the next question, Frank. You don't happen to have any pink firearms within your collection, do you?
Pink? No, but maybe some fuchsia.
See, that's what I've been trying to tell people. I'm kind of into that fuchsia thing. Pink, man, I can't stand just blatant pink. I just can't take it. I mean, and I can only imagine being shot with a pink gun.
I do have some pink handcuffs, though.
Oh, you know, that was a fashion trend. Back, I remember when those came out, but what was it, the early 2000s? Oh, yes, indeedy. Yes, I remember.
Those are really nice for domestic violence calls.
There were a few of my cohorts that ran around with hot pink handcuffs, and man, let me tell you, I think there was more bloodshed with those because of those pink handcuffs than anything else, I'm telling you. Do not attempt to place hot pink handcuffs on somebody under the influence of some mind-altering substance. It just does not work. Just doesn't work. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's kind of like what we talked about before a couple episodes ago. If you can't handle a 40 caliber, a 10 millimeter, or a 45, then just don't wear a badge. You know what I'm saying? No. I just don't. So, yeah, and that's actually, believe it or not, once again, a reoccurring theme here on this fabulous podcast channel. You know, there are some guys and gals in uniform that might practice a few things that would, you know, get them into deeper water than what they could possibly handle. And then, of course, once something like that occurs and they realize, ooh, maybe I should not have done that. Maybe I won't do that again.
Nah, they'll do it again.
Oh, that's on the public safety side of the house. And here, we're just talking about people run-of-the-mill that just carrying guns haphazardly in public and not realizing maybe the ramifications of doing practicing.
Well, you know, just so there's no misunderstanding. So this state offers a permit, and it states it is a license to carry handgun. It does not say anywhere on here that it is a concealed weapons permit or anything like that. That just means that I have a card that allows me to carry a gun.
Now, let's not mention the name of the state, but just what color is that card?
Oh, it's pink.
See? See, I'm telling you.
No correlation.
But back in the day before they had cards, you know, it was a pink sheet of paper.
Yeah. I actually still have one.
I do too.
But where I was going with this was, I mean, this state is not a traditional open carry state. But it's not a traditional concealed carry state either. But
it's just a sad state. I'm sorry. I had to say that.
It's one of those things that the majority of people nowadays, they carry it for a fashion statement. I was in the store with my son, and there were these two individuals that were carrying their pink and purple guns, and there was a conversation that we had, and he asked me if that was legal, and I said, well, it's not illegal, but it's not smart either. So if you're a bad guy and you come into a room with five people in it, and you see the one person that has a gun on his hip, who are you going to shoot first? I'm going to shoot the guy with the gun, because he poses a viable threat. I mean, you say you're carrying your gun for protection, but the way that you carry it is putting you to the forefront of a problem.
So what you're trying to tell me is that you might actually be attracting attention to yourself and causing yourself some type of undue
bodily injury, yes,
harm, or even death, just by unwittingly carrying a firearm out in the open.
Yeah.
I see.
When I leave the house, I have a gun on me, period.
Well, yes. I mean, you're a trained professional.
Here's the thing. When I carry a gun, you'll never know I have it.
You've been through the trained observation class offered, the 2.75-hour course in service that makes you an expert on identifying
the characteristics of someone who's carrying a gun, yes.
Yes.
But, my thing is this. If I have to pull my gun, I want it to be when I want it to be pulled, and I want the element of surprise.
So what you're telling me is you're actually thinking tactically. I mean,
if you want to use that term, sure.
Well,
I just think of it like, I'm just a sneaky little fucker, and I want to have the drop on them. I don't want them to know that I have a gun.
Well, I get that. And that's, of course, where we're going with this. You know, in other words, you're thinking ahead a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You're anticipating possible scenarios that could happen based upon your experience, your training, your education, blah, blah, blah. And you are trying to avert unnecessary issues on your part just to make life that much easier.
Yep.
Correct? I mean, is that a safe assumption to go to make as your thought process and carrying a weapon and everything?
Yeah, I'll agree with that, yeah.
Okay. So, in other words, one need not be a trained professional in order to apply some modicum of forethought when considering carrying and possibly brandishing a firearm in public.
No, you have to have some kind of training. You can't just have Billy Joe Jim Bob going down.
Well,
and I should
see. Well, here's the thing: we have a recent example of that. Okay, and once again, we have plenty of examples out here of what not to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's of course made news, made national news, and all that. But we actually have an example of a young man that actually did things the right way.
Yeah.
And actually saved the day for a lot of people within a particular shopping mall, okay?
Yeah.
Now, this gentleman, this young man, did not have any formal professional training. Now, he was trained.
But he did have some training.
So, that's what I'm getting at, is that we have to delineate a little bit. And we've made this point before in a few previous episodes discussing training, but this young man was trained by his grandfather and father, other family members, let's put it that way, and made a number of shots at about 40 yards to a moving target, 80% accuracy?
Yeah, it was 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10 within 15-second time period. So, for a number of people that I know, they could do that, but I also know of a number of people that do carry firearms professionally that could pose a bit of a challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, even those that have undergone professional training, air quotes once again on a podcast, but professional training, met a professional training standard, let's put it that way. And once again, we can go back to your most recent example while you were at the academy. you know, on an academy level where everybody should be on a certain level of training, and the stories that you brought back, you know, that we discussed in some previous episodes beyond abysmal.
At the academy level, you should be at the bare minimum.
Yes, but the problem is the bare minimum is too minimal. I mean, not to rehash everything, but just as a quick reminder, what you spent a week at a basic academy, so a 40-hour time period, okay?
Yep.
1 week at the academy, which I would argue would not be nearly enough for a basic level of training. But in 40 hours, remind us, what did you actually shoot during that week? Okay, as far as, just give us a typical course of fire, if you will.
Well, you had, let's see, they were 3, 5, 7, 12, and 25 yard lines, and each one had 10 rounds with multiple magazine changes, right hand, left hand, or strong hand, weak hand. And then you had both hands we would shoot, kneeling, standing, behind a barricade. And then we would shoot from the 50-yard line, too.
Okay, so how much time out of those 40 hours did you spend on some type of, I'd say, tactically related shooting scenarios? You know, like possible real life scenarios, like a moving target. Did you ever move off of a static line to shoot? Were you always standing still?
There was one, I think it was the 7-yard line. You had to, the target would turn, you would draw and take a step to the left.
Okay.
And that was it.
And of course, excuse me, this was all done with a regular duty belt rig. Yeah. Right. Okay, so everybody donned whatever duty belt that they were issued, and that is how they fired. That's how they were trained to draw and fire from their duty rig, their duty belt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's remind most police departments, of which I've been affiliated, either require or expect their officers, deputies, to carry off duty.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have some trained professionals, and that's why I'm saying we're going to delineate between civilians and quote-unquote trained professionals. So we have a group of trained professionals that have never been trained to draw their firearm from an off-duty type of holster.
Mm-hmm.
Is that safe to assume? I mean, while you were at the academy, did you ever...
No, it was all right from the duty belt.
Okay. So my point is, even a decent number of trained professionals that have gone through a basic academy curriculum, depending upon obviously where you go, and I'm going to make that point here in a minute as well. But we have a number of trained professionals out here that have not been trained to draw and brandish a weapon in an off-duty scenario, mm-hmm. with off-duty clothing. You know, something other than a duty rig or a uniformed gun belt and such. So, if that is not a little bit alarming...
I'll add this to it. So, when... Like my department, when we go and we qualify, you're supposed to... qualify with your off-duty gun too, and when you do that, you actually draw from however you would normally carry it. Like I carry mine appendix, so that's where I draw, shoot, and return it to. And we run the same course of fire
with your off-duty.
With okay. your off-duty.
Now, that brings me to the point that I was going to make, as far as we have that basic level, and then we have whatever departments or agencies require on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, in many, many cases, we actually have various departments that require maybe much higher level of training standard.
Yeah.
Then there are some departments that cannot afford to train to that extent, so they have to rely upon the academy experience or just, and I say just in service, but once again, you know, in theory, it would be great if every agency could qualify or train in firearms in service class wise every month, mm-hmm. but very few can do that. So we have a lot of agencies that can qualify or train every 3 months, quarterly.
Oh, we do it. Every 4 months we do ours.
Okay, so that's the whole thing. It's not like joining the military where, hey, everybody gets trained the exact same way in basic training or AIT or whatever, and then goes, you know, and is required to maintain their proficiency or whatever, however many times a year in the military.
I mean, what we'll do is we'll do a qualification shoot, and then we'll do like a combat shoot. We'll do modified scenario based. You know, they'll have it set up with cones. Like this is a hallway. You know, you may have a tree down here that you got to shoot at the end of the hallway, and you'll have certain targets set up. And you know, one target will be painted red, that's a bad guy, then the yellow ones are the good guys, and, you know, you can only shoot the bad guys, and you kind of have to differentiate between the two. And
right.
So
they do, right, and so a lot of departments, once again, depending upon standards and budgets and things like that, every department's a little bit different as far as their standards and what they require. But the point is, even on a basic level, we don't have a whole lot of of police officers that get a lot of training in an off-duty scenario, as far as off-duty clothing and things like that. It may have to wait until you get into an in-service class. And now, there again, back in the day, with a decently sized city department in the Midwest, when it came time for qualifications, we showed up at 8 o'clock in the morning, and we expended some blood, sweat, and tears for, 8 to sometimes 10 hours. And then you pack up and you go home and lick your wounds and clean your weapons and all that stuff, get everything polished up again for your next duty shift or what have you. So, and that was one of the one of the mantras that we exercised, was that you only get into this what you get out, or you only get out of it what you put into it. So once again, in other words, it's up to us as students to, one, realize that we do need to get better no matter who we are or what level we might be at, and two, take the training seriously enough to absorb as much practice as we can and be just a little bit more proficient or a little bit faster or a little bit more accurate or what have you at the end of that training day. But
yeah, but I mean, the thing is, you have to put in the time and the effort on your own.
Oh, in between, that's the other aspect to this, is that no matter who you are, a trained professional, civilian, or what have you, carrying a firearm is a huge, huge responsibility. And it takes a lot of dedication, a lot of training, and a lot of focus. And actually, especially within the last couple of years, a boatload of money for ammunition to be able to maintain, I say, a quote-unquote decent level, which is, I know, very, very subjective, but still, any modicum of level of training standard. So, in other words, what color of pistol to carry with the color of outfit for the day might not be so important in the real world.
Well, and to get back to what we were originally talking about, is your average Joe Schmo on the street, you know, they have good intentions of carrying a gun, but the way they carry it and how they present that is where they lack common sense. You know, it's like, you'll see guys that they'll have a duty holster that they'll use for an off-duty carry, and think, oh, I'll just throw a shirt over it, but yet you have this big lump on the side of your hip. It's like, no, come on.
Yeah, but that advertises something. I'm sorry, but to those who are trained to a level that's standard,
yeah,
what message does that send?
Hey, look at me. I'm cool. No, you're not. You're an idiot.
I'm a target. Please shoot me first.
I carry a full-size 1911, and I can carry that appendix, and you'll never know I have it.
That's true. 5-inch barrel,
mm-hmm.
And nobody knows the difference.
And
until, of course, you make the decision.
Exactly.
To,
wear a pair of shorts and a t-shirt and carry a gun, and you will never know I have it.
And that's exactly what you might want to consider doing.
And, you know, it's, the thing is, I'm trying not to stereotype anybody, but there is a certain group of people, age-wise, that are guilty of this. They will literally tuck their shirt in and have their gun presented to the world to see. They're usually younger. They're usually inexperienced. They usually get to the point to where, you know, I can now legally do this, so I'm going to do it because I can.
Which may not be the best reason.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I carry a gun because I want to go home at night. If I go to the gas station to get gas or something to drink, I got a gun with me. Not because I want to be cool, it's because it's a necessity. Now, you know, the old saying, I'd rather have it than not need it, and need it and not have it. There you go.
Well, once again, that's, yeah, it's called forethought, planning ahead, expecting the worst, and whatever happens is a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that their good intentions have thrust them to a victim level.
Well, yeah, that proverbial road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too.
Yeah, and not realizing, you know, taking into account everything else, all these other variables.
Yeah.
But, hey, you look cool with a pink gun.
It's like you go to Walmart on any given day of the week, and you're going to see exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, I've seen it myself.
There are guys and girls that will have a baggy shirt on, untucked, but yet they will tuck it in behind the gun so the gun's hanging out. It's like, mm-hmm. Well, you feel the need to show everybody that, hey, I have a gun.
Well, yes. And I actually overheard somebody speak of that not too long ago. This was not at Wallace World, but another box-type store where two employees were discussing that, as a matter of fact. Excuse me. And one believed, I mean, I heard this statement, or once again, I'm paraphrasing, but basically, hey, if they see that I have a gun, they're going to steer clear of me and deal with somebody else. You know, they're going to see I'm not a victim. But that is their train of thought, or that particular person's train of thought.
It's that mentality that turns them into a victim. Because let's think about the mental stability of somebody who has had the prior planning to come in and shoot up whatever establishment. They're coming in and they just want targets of opportunity. They're going to come in and they're going to see Becky Joe with her pink gun on her hip. You're going to be the first one to catch a few rounds. And then they're going to move on. Because you pose a threat. Not that you're like, oh, you have a gun. Yeah, you're not a victim. I'm going to leave you alone. No, no, no. No, no. No, no. You are number one on the hit list.
There are other ways, nonverbal cues that would send that message that you're not a victim. Mm-hmm. And yes, that would be one of the first cues that I would see. Number one, you don't know how to properly carry a firearm, which tells me your level of training and your level of dedication to that firearm, which tells me that technically you're not much of a threat, but yeah, I'm still going to take you out first. Because I don't want to have to worry about you. Boom, you're done. You're dispatched next, okay? But that's the whole thing. If you want to present yourself as a quote-unquote non-victim, then you carry yourself in a professional fashion. You keep your head on a swivel. You notice things that other people don't notice. And you move about in a quiet state of affairs, not attracting attention to yourself. And you go about doing your business. And yes, people get the message. Okay, people, bad guys get the message. Bad guys, a lot of people discount the bad guy. Is, oh, he can't be that smart. Oh, he's got to be stupid. Oh, no. If you look at some of these scenarios, especially those that might be under the influence of a mind-altering substance, or might be having a proverbial screw loose, or missing a few marbles upstairs, or what have you, and they still set up meticulous planning.
Mm-hmm.
As far as what they're going to do, their target, they study their target, they study the types of people that are in the target, or do whatever within the target, and they know what their target is, and they know how they want to either manipulate that target or dispatch people within that target or what have you. So that's another fatal flaw, is that you you don't underestimate your opponent, and you have to realize that a number of these people that are hell-bent on doing these things spend a great deal of time preparing. And I'll dare say that a whole lot of them spend a lot more time preparing within the martial arts arena, and I use that term loosely. I mean, they may be practicing boxing or whatever, but firearms falls within that area of training. So, and that's something that that was another mantra that we, a training mantra that we had back in the day is, you know, for every day you're not training, your bad guy is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bad guy, the guy that wants to kill you, the guy that wants to take out the cop, he is training, okay? And especially if somebody sent him to the big house, he's got all day to train, every day to train, every day to think about the next time he's going to meet the pig with the badge. He's going to take him out.
And you have that. But then the other part of that is their mentality, that they have something that they want to do, something they want to accomplish, and nothing's going to stand in their way to get that accomplished. So a little Becky Jo with her pink gun, or Billy Joe Jim Bob with his high point, they're just gonna be cannon fodder.
Exactly. In other words, those bad guys mentally are on a different plane than those people carrying pink guns.
Mm-hmm.
and mis-sized holstered firearm or what have you.
I mean any of those examples. The thing is, Those individuals that are carrying those guns, when it actually comes down to the point where they have to draw and use it,
well, that's a whole nother scenario.
9 times out of 10, they're not going to.
There you go. And I think we may have mentioned this before. How many times, as a civilian firearms instructor, did I have people come up and say, look, I want to carry a gun for self-defense. Will you train me? Well, it depends. I have one question for you right off the bat. Okay, what's that? Are you willing to kill somebody? Or I just get a length of time of silence. Okay, thank you for your answer. Have a nice day. Go buy yourself a slingshot, or get yourself a can of mace or a baseball bat. Get yourself a pet grizzly bear, you know, whatever. But you really don't have any business carrying a deadly weapon. Excuse me, and I say deadly weapon, it didn't have to be a firearm. I mean, a switchblade knife or whatever, you know.
Wait a minute, I can get a grizzly bear and carry a gun at the same time?
Yes. You didn't know that?
I can be like Putin and ride him around.
You can ride him around. It's great. Really, we've got plenty of bear fodder around here. I mean, it could be dirt cheap to feed them. Because you see those signs that say, don't feed the bear, and then those guys that show up and turn into bear fodder, you know.
Uh-huh.
That's what I liked about being out west. They had, you know, the stupid effort ratio is what I called it. Yeah.
Yes.
People thought I was being funny about that, but I was dead serious. Out west, you have natural barriers to stupid efforts. Okay? You have mountain roads with no guardrails.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when you're pathetically drunk and you decide to go home and you drive off and you fly off that road, you know, 5,000 feet down, you're nothing but dust afterwards.
It's not
so,
the fall. It's a sudden stop that kills you.
Well, yeah, but the whole point is it's easy cleanup.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And you can only do it once. You know what I'm saying? Oops. You know, all right. Well, you know, like bear. Don't feed the bear. Huh? Well, I want to go check. Oh, he looks so cute. And okay, go. Go right over there. Well, you inadvertently fed the bear.
That's right.
Now, I'm a big fan of bears. Okay, I like the Chicago Bears, and I like grizzly bears. I'm a big fan of bears, okay? And I always side on Team Bear.
I would prefer a Kodiak bear myself.
Kodiak, beautiful specimen of bear. But here's the thing. Here's what really torques me off, okay? It's been a number of years ago, but remember that guy that was, I think he was maybe one of the pioneers of YouTube stardom and everything, but he was going up to Alaska, making trips to Alaska to quote-unquote save the bear.
Okay? Oh, the bear
guy. He was one of those bear guys, okay? And he wasn't that old. But the whole thing is, this guy would go up there and camp somewhere within the wilds of Alaska. Mm-hmm. And he would videotape himself. He'd take pictures of bear. And I got to give the guy some credit, because he took some excellent pictures of bears in the wild.
Didn't he have some kind of quote-unquote relationship with, it was either a mom and a cub or...
Well, apparently, he thought he did, but once again, it's kind of like bad guys placing orders that they don't realize that they're placing.
Yeah.
This guy went up to Alaska, okay, and he sets up his cameras and everything like that. He takes his girlfriend up, his future wife. Apparently, he had already proposed. So he takes his future wife up there with him, and of course, to scope out an area, okay, apparently he had been to this area in the past, so he knew this was a feeding area. It was right off a river or a stream, chock full of salmon.
Yep.
Okay, so, and he'd been up there numerous times in the past, so he knew that most of the bear in that area came to that particular location to feed at certain times of the year, at certain times of the day. Okay, so the guy wasn't just walking up there blindly with his girlfriend. Okay, so what's he do? He sets up his camp right next to the area, the feeding area of the bear. Mm-hmm. Set right next to the bear. Now, one of the last videos that he did... I'm sorry, but I'm sadistic. I really am. I'm sadistic. But I'm standing, I'm watching this video, and I can see him standing up next to the tent. His girlfriend is cooking whatever, preparing whatever, by the tent and the campfire and everything. And behind them, in the distance, I see two bear. And both bear had the look on their faces like, I'm about to have you for supper.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for showing up. I've been famished for human, you know, for a long time.
I'm tired of eating fish.
Yes. I've had so much salmon lately, I have been yearning for a good chunk of human beef. You know, that's what I want. That is the exact expression on the bear's face, okay? Of course, once again, I'm Team Bear, so I'm saying, you know what? I don't want anything bad to happen to these people, but I know what's going to happen. Okay, I hadn't seen the video before, you know, nobody told me about it, but I'm thinking somebody is about to become bear fodder. And yeah, once again, I'm a mere knuckle dragger. What do I know? Okay, I have the brain matter of what, a doorknob, and yeah. Even I can tell that this fine young couple is about to become bear fodder. And sure enough, the bear ate them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what really torqued me off about that whole thing is that the park rangers had to show up, they had to do their investigation, then they had to find the bear that actually ate them, and then, of course, they had to put the bear down. Why?
But here's the thing. That guy, all he had to do was outrun his girlfriend.
Exactly. That's what everybody says, right? You don't have to be the slowest guy or the fastest guy. You just can't be the slowest.
Exactly. And you know what? I mean, he could have just shot her in the foot, and then he could have leisurely walked away.
You would think. You would think.
That's why you always have to carry a gun.
Sorry, ladies, but Frank is Frank. You know, I just... Here's a warning, ladies. If Frank ever invites you for a wildland area hike, just beware of what he has planned. Okay, he does not want to become bear fodder, just to let you know. And apparently, at times, he might play dirty. Yeah.
Just a little bit.
He could play dirty. But, yeah, the what really torqued me off about that whole escapade is that this guy, this buffoon, goes up there to, quote-unquote, save the bear, and yet it's because of his idiotic behavior that a bear had to be put down in order to investigate his demise.
Mm-hmm.
And that really torques the living bejesus out of me. I mean, it really does. So, yeah. And there again, now the current society is where we're at. Yeah, we have more examples of that on a daily basis anyway that we won't get into. But yes, in other words, getting back to that concealed carry thing, you want to carry in a solid package, I guess, if you will. And no matter how the holster might be designed or whatever, in other words, it's very important because, once again, something that a lot of people do not consider is the fact that somebody else might just take your weapon from you.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of people do not even consider that as a possible scenario.
It goes even deeper than that. I mean, you get these holsters that have the strap with a snap on it. Okay. Sure, you know, it may give you some decent retention, but here's the thing. You have to be able to unsnap that and pull that gun out. And, you know, it's like, no.
In other words, effectively deploy it.
You buy these things, you get these quote-unquote safety devices that are incorporated in these holsters, and you never play with it. You never work it. You never draw from it.
So what you're telling me is you should actually incorporate that in your training regimen?
Mm-hmm.
Frank, you're telling me that I need to invest more time in this whole gun thing?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah.
Well, here's another aspect. If you're going to spend time training on how to deploy that weapon from that particular holster setup, what about if somebody actively tries to take that from you? I mean, should you try, you know, any type of training or anything, you know, to like weapon retention training or anything? Or do you just forget about it?
Personally, I'm going to punch you in the throat.
So you're telling me you already have a plan then for weapon retention?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I see how that works then. So if you think about carrying a firearm on duty or off duty, whatever the scenario might be, it would just go hand in hand to go ahead and consider, retention and deployment.
You have to have that mindset that if you're going to carry a gun, there is a very big possibility somebody is going to try and take it away from you.
Hmm. Well, I gotta tell you, man, doing this police thing for 20 some odd years, I've had two situations in my life, or in my professional life, that bad guys tried to take my gun from me. Both failed miserably, by the way. I can, kind of throw that out there. It can happen very easily. And oftentimes it happens when you're distracted.
Mm-hmm.
Or that, of course, bad guys look for this stuff.
And, you have a holster that is twice the size of the pistol that you're trying to carry. You know, hey, I'm going to come up and push you in the back and pull your gun right out of your holster, and you're never even going to know it.
It could be just that easy.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, the bangs that you hear are actually the reports from your weapon being used yep. against you.
And then, you know, by the time you actually get your head together and go, oh, I have a gun, let me pull my gun, you reach back and you have an empty holster, and it's like, shit.
Or you're already semi-paralyzed from the burning sensations of the mm-hmm. rounds penetrating your torso. That would be a wake-up call right there, would it not?
Or it might put you to sleep.
In other words, it might be a little bit late
yeah.
to be considering that because the damage is already done.
Mm-hmm.
And you just got popped with your own gun in public. And now, what makes it even worse, your gun is being used to do harm to other people.
Mm-hmm. Which would, you know, depending on the prosecutor, that could come back to legally bite you in the ass.
If you survive.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be a bad day for you on a whole number of levels then. Not just one. I mean, we're talking a whole bunch of bad things happening to you just because you didn't have the forethought to properly carry and brandish your firearm. That's a lot to consider, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, anytime you put a gun and you walk out of the house, you know, you have to understand every bullet that leaves that gun has a lawyer attached to it.
And if it's coming from your weapon, it's got your name on the back of it.
Mm-hmm.
Some way, shape, or form, it's coming back to you.
Yep.
Figuratively. In a court of law.
Yeah, I mean, there are ways that you can make it. Never mind. We're not going to go down that road.
Yeah. Once again, there are some things that we just can't get into on the
If you want to know that, go ahead and send us an email.
Yes. And by the way, this is a great time for a reminder. We are merely knuckle draggers. We're here for entertainment purposes only, and we are not attempting to give out any, I repeat, any type of legal advice. Because once again, if you're listening up until now, you know that none of this even approaches any level or modicum of legal advice.
No.
Yes. Yeah. That's the leisure. That's you know, being a knuckle dragger really isn't that bad.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying?
You know,
because
old saying,
the level is set so lowly, it's beautiful.
Hey, ignorance is bliss, I'm telling you.
I'm telling you. This is something else. Yeah, this whole knuckle dragger thing. You know, I was, you know, earlier in my career aspiring for excellence, and I figured, you know what, forget this. Yeah, it's so much easier being a knuckle dragger.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my golly. But yeah, hopefully we try to give you, you know, along with the entertainment value, a few points to ponder, maybe. Obviously, we always encourage people to find training, get that training. Once again, just like we talked about in a couple of past episodes, we kind of touched on it earlier, is that, you know what, training from a reliable source, and I, once again, using air quotes on a podcast, reliable source, i.e., maybe a family member that used to be in the military or law enforcement, somebody that has some legitimate experience of force-on-force scenarios. And I say that because, once again, we've kind of delineated this in earlier with the training factor, is that we have men and women that are wonderful men and women serving communities, the military, our country, blah, 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 that maybe have not had those experiences. They don't know what it's like to have a bad guy try to take their gun from them. Maybe they've not been in a gunfight before. They don't know what it's like to have a bad guy actively try to kill them. You know, you want to try to find training from sources, from people that I'll say have been there and done that. Like we actually used to use that phrase all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Another couple phrases, you've been downrange, you've been a target. Okay, when you know what it's like, I can tell you the distinct difference in pitch between a 9mm round and a 7.62x39, and I wish I didn't have that ability. So that doesn't mean I know what I'm doing, but the whole idea is when you've experienced things like that, you look at life completely differently, and you also look at your training much differently, and you have a different approach to these things and realize that there might anybody around you might provide you with a modicum of enlightenment.
Well, and here's the thing. So you have formal training, meaning you're going to go to one of the box store gun ranges that offer, you know, basic marksmanship, or, you know, they're going to quote unquote teach you how to shoot. The only problem with those, they are on a stringent time frame. They don't have time to spend with each individual and answer questions and concerns and deal with issues and problems. If you have the ability to find somebody that has some experience, that is probably your best bet, because then you connect with them on a personal level to where, you know, you can ask the stupid questions and not have to worry about the ridicule of your other classmates who are like, Jesus, would you shut up and so we can just shoot and get this over with?
You mean that never happened to you?
Which part?
I'm just going to say, man, maybe I shouldn't admit it, but I had a lot of people laughing at me when I asked dumb questions. I just got used to the... I just figured I'd just turn into the class clown or something.
Well, I always ask the dumb questions.
Yeah. It's part of that but, knuckle-dragger thing.
I mean, the thing is, so... when you start asking questions, those are the reasons that you need somebody who can stop what they're doing and talk to you and answer your questions. And you know what? Hey, if it goes off in a different direction, so be it. But at the end of the day, you feel better because, you know, your questions have been answered. You've addressed them. You've trained with that. You know, quote unquote, what to do in that scenario. Then you can move on.
That's a great point. It's worth shopping for training what works best for you. Oftentimes a smaller class size and things like that, like you said, one-on-one training.
Yeah, you get these guys that are like, oh, you know, I'm a firearms instructor, I'm a this, I'm a that, I've, you know, got this certification. Those are the ones you want to stay the fuck. Just stay away from them. Just stay away from them. Because they're only there for the money. You get somebody who knows what they're doing, you're going to get a better...
Don't confuse a sheepskin for wisdom.
Well, yeah, I was going to call it a shit coat, but yeah. We'll go
sheep. Well, we can say that.
Yeah, it's like... You have to be comfortable with who you have teaching you. And it's literally the lesser of two evils. You know, do you want something to where you can hang on the wall and go, oh, look, I went through this class to... I know how to shoot now. No, you don't.
There is a
range in this municipality that offer classes. And they provide the guns. But do you know the caliber of guns that you are shooting? 22s.
Really?
22s. That's what you're shooting. So you're going to, you know, yeah, you may be blowing the center of the target out with a 22, but the first time that you grab a, you know, 9mm, a 40, a 38, 45, 10mm, you know, whatever, and you pull that trigger, guess what? Everything that you just learned just went right out the window.
Shock and awe.
Because that recoil just resets your brain back to the beginning when you have no clue what to do. And it's just, you really seriously have to train with what you're going to carry. If you're going to step up to the big boy gun and carry the God's caliber of 45 ACP, then guess what? You're going to have to train with that.
By the way, we highly recommend 45 ACP, by the way.
Yes, the only other caliber is a 10 millimeter.
Not that we haven't brought that up before, but just as a quick reminder.
Yes. You know, when you care to send the very best. So, you know.
There you go.
It's kind of like trying to learn to drive in a go-kart and then jumping into a semi and trying to drive that. Two different things. You know, yes, there are people who will try and argue, well, it's the fundamentals. No, it's not. Your fundamentals are different on a 22 compared to a 45. Your grip's different. Your trigger squeeze is different. The recoil is different. Your target acquisition is different. Everything. Completely different. Night and day. So, yes, you know, you have to put some time behind that gun. It's going to cost you money because you're going to have to buy ammo to punch holes in targets. It's just how it is. Until you get to the point that, you know, you are comfortable enough to go and shoot and you can look at the target and go, yep, I'm okay with that shot group.
And that's still only the beginning. Because, once again, you're going to be in a dynamic scenario mm-hmm. in the real world. And, once again, that involves force-on-force elements of training and things like that. So we're going to get into that stuff a little bit later. But the whole idea is to raise some awareness of what to think about prior to carrying a firearm in public. With that said, don't be bear fodder, and we'll see you next time.
Bye now.